This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. It's one and done for the youngest mayor in the history of La Crosse. Matt Harder was 24 years old when he was elected in 2009 and one of the youngest mayors ever in the state of Wisconsin. Mayor Harder announced late last week that he would not seek a second term this spring. I asked him recently why he decided not to run again.
Well, this is something that I put a lot of thought into, and really since the day that I was elected to office, I had thoughts about, if a second term is something that, I felt that, me being in that position or working towards would be a good thing for the community and best for myself and really everyone as a whole. So, in the more recent days, coming closer to election time, it's something that I put more and more thought into, discuss with family and friends and supporters and advisors in general. And after, quite a bit of discussion and a lot of thought and meditation, I do think it's best for the city if someone else steps into the mayor's office for the next 4 years. I was elected at a pretty young age. There are, advantages and disadvantages to that, both for the community and for myself. And, overall, I think the last 4 years have gone very well for the city, and I can't say that it's because of my doing, but overall, I think, all of us working together, heading in the direction that we have for the past 4 years, I think we've moved our city forward. And I think absolutely La Crosse has its best days yet to come. And I think, the next 4 years, we're going to be heading in the right direction again. I think the community will elect the right person for the job. They'll get someone in there that will keep us heading in the right direction. We'll bring some new perspective, and I'm sure I maintain some of the perspective that we worked towards over the past 4 years of operating as efficiently as possible, maintaining levels of spending, and always keeping a steady thought on all the residents of our community, how everything we do affects them, how much government resource we put into things affects them, level of taxes, and direct impact that our operations have on them. So I think that perspective will certainly be maintained, and we'll see some new things come up.
So you received a lot of praise from different members of the community, especially when it came to your campaign promise of keeping taxes low or not raising taxes in La Crosse. But then you also faced criticism within City Hall from different heads of departments or different city council members. I mean, can you talk about those two different varying forces coming at you and how you almost walk the line in trying to please not only the community, but the employees of City Hall?
Yeah, well, I'll say that getting out into the community and getting out of City Hall, the work environment, I always felt a lot more support, out there, whether it was, going to the grocery store or bowling alley or, seeing people around the community in general, because we have worked for them. We've worked hard to, do what I honestly feel that the people of the city feels best and felt was best for the city and what they elected me to do, what I heard when I went and knocked on their doors before they elected me to the office. To this day,
taxes.
I remember that exactly, and I will never forget that. Why they elected me, I mean, what they told me before they put me in office, what they wanted me to do, and I stuck to it and worked for them. Obviously, there's going to be some conflict to make that happen, in the City Hall environment. If you have, people that are working for their departments, fighting for budgets, fighting for, I suppose if you say they're each of their individual department, as, the city employees should. I mean, they're fighting for, their department, for the service that they're there to offer, for, what they're there to do. So they're really fighting for their mission, as an employee, as the city of La Crosse, and to gain all the resources, financial and other, that they need in order to accomplish that and make that happen. So I certainly can't knock, any of the city employees or department heads for, fighting for their department and fighting for the mission that they're charged with carrying out. At the same time, they're not elected by the people. They, to a degree, have a different mission. We're all on this. I like to think that we're all on the same page and we're all serving the community. But reality is, they do have a little bit different of a mission, each individual department, than what even the common council members have or the mayor has. All our jobs are tailored a little bit differently, and we all, in the end, answer to different people. The mayor is The elected chief executive answers to all the voters of La Crosse. The council members answer to their constituents in their wards. Employees will answer to their supervisors. The department heads will answer to the common council and the mayor. So we all answer to different people in that degree. But with that being said, I think they've always done a good job, city employees and department heads. And the conflict that you mentioned, that may have been there in City Hall and was there, and I will acknowledge it. I can't necessarily say that that's a bad thing. If you look where it brought us to today, I mean, what it got us. We did break a 16-year cycle of raising taxes at the maximum rate every year, and over the past 4 years, we've kept them flat and reduced taxes. So with that being said, that conflict was probably good to a degree because we are maintaining levels of services that the community is accustomed to that are acceptable, public safety services and other services that the city offers. We're maintaining them, and we're doing a good job of providing a high level of service with the resources that we have there to do that.
I'm wondering, Mayor Harder, if you can talk about what you're most proud of in your time as mayor. You mentioned holding the line on taxes. Are there other things that you are very proud of as accomplishments in your time?
Well, to answer that directly, I'd say, everyone working together, which may even sound, a little bit opposite of, our earlier discussion, but everyone working together to bring us where we are today. And again, there's no doubt that, over the past 3.5 years, there's been disagreements, difference, on the council, between the mayor's office, the council, on various matters. But at the same time, every year we got things done that needed to be done. And, sure, maybe it wasn't the prettiest thing in the world, but, sometimes government isn't, and heated debate isn't. Said once before on the common council floor, our type of government is the only thing that man has ever devised, as a substitute for open warfare. So, with that being said,
it's one of the nicer things I've heard on the common council floor.
Sure. It's not supposed to look pretty to a degree, because if it did and everyone just nodded their heads and always agreed with each other and didn't ever, bring up, something that they felt might offend someone because they disagreed with, or pointing out a flaw in a proposition that was put before the council, we would not have as strong of a government, we wouldn't have as strong of a process, and we wouldn't have as strong of a city as we have if we did not have people that were willing to do that, were willing to step up and disagree, willing to go against the grain. So, I won't apologize for any disagreement that happened, and I, in the end, I think it's made us a stronger community because of it. I think we've come up with better results and better outcomes because of it, and overall, I'll say that I think Common Council, the city employees, the executives, have done a good job. And again, while there certainly were times of disagreement and probably even a little bit of turmoil, I suppose, if you call it that, it's got us where it has got us. I think it's, all been controlled, and, we've got a stronger community because of it.
Mayor Matt Harder of La Crosse recently announced he will not be running for a second term. An extended version of this interview is available on our website, wpr.org/lacrosse. People who want to run for mayor can begin circulating nomination papers on Saturday. People must receive between 200 and 400 signatures from city residents to have a place on the spring ballot. You're listening to Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, I'm Maureen McCollum. Despite a greater awareness about the importance of exercise and a better diet to reduce obesity in children, there's typically not a lot of money in K-12 school budgets to improve their physical education programs. But one southwestern Wisconsin school is receiving almost $1 million over the next 3 years to get students and the community moving. WPR's Steve Roysom has more.
Like so many schools, the North Crawford School in Soldiers Grove had to work with a less than desirable budget. Last year, the rural school, with its student body of 460, paid just under $2,000 on gym class expenses. School officials wanted to take their physical fitness offerings to the next level to show students there are a variety of ways to get active. In the last decade, the U.S. Department of Education's Carol M. White Physical Education Program has issued grant funds to K-12 schools with tight budgets that want to improve physical education programs to help meet state standards. The North Crawford School District will receive more than $300,000 for each of the 3 years. The school does have to match part of the grant. And middle school principal Brandon Munson says the grant funding will provide a wide variety of new physical activities for the students.
A lot of our students may not get the opportunity to even own a mountain bike because of our demographics in our district. You know, snowshoeing may never have been a possibility for a student. Skiing, cross country or downhill, you know, may never have happened for a lot of our students.
Year one will be about health assessment. Physical education instructor Judd Eastman says students will use monitors to gauge how active they already are. Year two will bring in equipment.
Treadmills, ellipticals, recumbent bikes, weight machines, spin bikes.
Eastman says he wants to teach students to be lifelong movers, which he says even with new equipment can be a tough sell.
What you have to do is show them benefits on their just daily life. And that's something with activity monitors that we're going to be getting, is that you can sit, put an activity monitor on you. You can wear it for a month, and then it spits out a report. It can be sent home in an email, and it shows your activity level, how much sleep you're getting. You know, it's not only how many points you scored in basketball. You know, it shows, you know, your movement when you're involved in different activities.
Improved nutrition is also an element of the federal grant program. It will also allow the North Crawford School District to take a hard look at the meals it's offering and maybe bring in some new options to expand the menu. Monique Hooker is a volunteer chef at North Crawford School.
As far as I'm concerned, you cannot separate physical and food to fight the obesity and the attention deficit, and that all our children are suffering from that.
Kay Tigg is North Crawford's food service director.
It's definitely exciting, and it's going to be hard work. I know that. It's going to take a lot more time, more energy, but it's worth it when you see the children, and if we can get them back on the healthy side of things, you bet.
Students seem to appreciate the changes that are already underway at the school. Hank Shellhorn is a junior at North Crawford. He says one change will help him and other students get into shape.
There's a salad bar that we can eat from, and it's open to anyone who wants it, and we have more fruits and vegetables every day that we can get, and which will obviously help to a better physical body type also.
North Crawford won't just spend all the grant money on students. Kids will take the message about nutrition and exercise home with them. Gloria Wall is director of the Crawford County Health Department.
We're one of surrounding counties, I think, in this whole basin, this southwest basin. The economic abilities aren't here. We don't have manufacturing. We no longer have the broad agricultural base also. We've lost that to the economy of the time. And you were talking about how will we take it home to the parents. They will. The children will take that home to the parents, and the parents will learn from the children. That's the beauty of starting with the children.
A community fitness center is also in the works. The North Crawford School District wasn't the only Wisconsin district to receive money from the U.S. Department of Education this year. The school districts of Shawamigan, Milwaukee, Mishicot, and Wautoma received 3-year grants as well. Steve Rysom, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Having the latest fitness equipment shouldn't make or break a school's physical education program. The goal of many FIED teachers is to do what they can with what they have, to encourage students to move their bodies and develop habits that will lead to a lifelong interest in exercise. WPR's Steve Rysom recently talked with Melissa Sprain, a FIED teacher at Lincoln Middle School in La Crosse, Ryan Burnt, a FIED teacher at Cooley Montessori in La Crosse, and Dr. Christy Malley. She teaches FIED as part of the teacher education program at UW La Crosse. Steve asked Dr. Malley if FIED teachers have an expectation of being frugal.
I think that's why we're kind of known as the creative teachers in the school, because we get really creative with what we can do with even a laundry basket and a paper box. And so, you know, movement, all we really need is the body. And so if we can get really creative in how do we use the body with things that are already around us, and I'm not saying that to say we don't need money, because making sure every child has a piece of equipment so they can, because we don't see kids very long and very often, and so when we do see them, we need to make sure that what we're doing is really, really focused on student learning. And so every child gets multiple repetitions, multiple opportunities to practice. So there's not waiting in line. There's not a need to take turns. So every child in that 30 or 45 minutes is getting multiple opportunities to really develop the skills, the attitudes, the knowledge, to want to be physically active, but also to be competent movers.
Has PE always been underfunded? Or has it been more, you know, newer trends? School budgets, you know, get tight, and Phi Ed gets perhaps hit more than others?
I don't think you can say that in a universal way. I really believe that it's building by building, and not even district by district, but probably building by building. It's what's going on in that school, how much funding do they have, what role is physical education playing in the entire school, are they having an impact outside the gymnasium walls? And I don't think you can say anything universal about how much money is.
How about you two? Any thoughts?
I think it depends on the support system around the school. I know on the north side we have an amazing community, and if there's something that we desperately need or we feel could benefit students, even if it's one student in particular might have specific needs, we can ask, and more often than not, there will be something on our doorstep that meets that need, and we're appreciative of that. It might not be for every school like that, but.
But
so,
we
so
have
the money
to do that because the budget is so
correct.
Limited.
Yes.
So, you know, as the economy, you know, purse strings get tightened, so do the budgets. And a lot of times we don't have a budget. We request equipment, and we hope that there might be a possibility that we get it. So, and that's all that we can do. And every building has a different budget. The problem with PE is our equipment is very expensive. And we see pretty much every single child in the school. So if we have six basketballs, those basketballs only last so long because we have so many kids using them. But if we need them for every single student, you know, it gets pricey. So although maybe all the content areas are granted $500, well, $500 might last us a month, and we'd be lucky. You know, soccer nets are $200 for something that is made out of PVC
pipe.
Let
alone a climbing wall and treadmills, right, and heart rate monitors and pedometers.
And I'm only referring to team sports because right, that's only the equipment that we have right now that is available.
Dr. Malley, you brought this up, and with a listing of equipment and the climbing wall and such. Is Phi Ed now gotten to the point where it's kind of in order to keep the kids, I don't know if you could say competitively in shape compared to other schools, but is there an element of kind of keeping up with the Joneses now?
I don't think it's an element of keeping up with the Joneses. It's about doing what's right, and it's about keeping up with the generation and what they really value. And just like, for example, technology. The physical education, the gymnasium is such an incredible place to be implementing technology. So I don't think it's about keeping up with anybody. It's about doing what's right for the student.
I'll start off with you, Melissa. What sort of budget do you work with annually, and how many students must that budget be spread upon?
We request equipment, and it's either a yes or no.
Okay.
There's no number that's given to us.
There's no account. There's no.
No.
Okay.
No, we have a building budget, and it has to be delivered amongst every content area. And this year, we have already requested items from our parent organization that basically takes care of us. We wrote a grant last year to get the La Crosse Public Education Foundation has done amazing things for all of us in the classroom, and we did a grant called Wellness Wednesdays to get yoga mats and more lifetime fitness activity material so that we can use it in our classroom. We're trying to partner with the community as often as possible because the budget's just, the money isn't there. It has to be spread out through everything. And then, you know, there's technology. With technology, it's expensive, and you have to stay current with that. 21st century skills that have to be incorporated, we need technology, and we need them in as many students' hands as possible. They are students that want immediate gratification. So the textbooks are going online, and so we need to have materials. So that's where the budgets are being spread throughout, and it doesn't make it right or it's wrong. It's just how it is.
Ryan, similar situation with you, tight budget.
The Northside Elementary is, of course, two buildings, and I work at both. And I have one number, and it's very ballpark and pretty low, actually, that would be required for both PE, any type of health material that I would want, and including adaptive physical education equipment. And that, if you compare regular PE equipment to adaptive PE equipment, it's not even close. And if you need anything that would be adaptive in nature, it's going to have quite a steep price. And so to spread that over two buildings, the entire Northside population, you know, we do count on a lot of support. And it boils down to what can we as teachers and a community do to foster that success in each student. And we don't want a failure-based curriculum. We don't want anything like that. We want each student to walk in and be successful, and that's where our creativity and the support from the community comes in to get each student that amount of success.
Is that sort of the secret weapon to making some of these programs go? Because I know with in elementary school, I have a son in elementary school, where the teachers do rely, they don't expect, but they do rely on contributions from parents and such like that. Is that true with FIAT as well? You have an active number of parents that are kind of keeping track of how things are going and what your needs are?
Oh, we're always appreciative of involved parents, and we encourage our students to keep their parents informed. We try to inform parents on what's going on. And the biggest involvement that we are looking for as educators in general, not just PE, but to have a successful student, whether it's moving or learning or whatnot, to have a support system and actively involve parents, and that could be the greatest friend to us. And so if they want to donate their time, perfect. If they choose to help other ways, even better.
This is Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Steve Rysom. It's a sort of roundtable discussion on the challenges of teaching physical education to kids. And a little bit we'll start talking about getting them active, getting to go out and play and live their lives a bit more healthy. And joining us, Melissa Sprain, a health and physical education teacher. She is at the Lincoln Middle School in La Crosse. Also, Ryan Berndt, he is a physical education teacher at Cooley Montessori and at Northside Elementary in La Crosse. And Dr. Christy Malley, UWL physical education teacher education. And Dr. Malley, I want to ask you, is all this equipment actually needed?
Education in general really needs to be looking at the world that our students are going to be living in as adults. And we really need to take into consideration the resources that they're going to have, the interests that they're going to have. What is our world going to be like in 2050 in terms of healthcare, in terms of just overall wellness of individuals? And in order to do that, we absolutely need to stop using the red rubber ball and really, really looking at, physical education. When you look at what is going on in many gyms, and there are incredible teachers out there, incredible teachers with passion and creativity and desire to change. They go above and beyond. They're writing grants. They are recruiting money from multiple places. But the problem is, a profession is only as good as its weakest person, as its weakest program. And unfortunately, the society, community, looks at physical education through the lens of their experience. And so if an adult, say a grandfather, is talking about his physical education experiences and his granddaughter is saying, hey, we played those same games, that's not okay. That because we need to keep up with the changing world. And so, the whole idea of equipment and the whole idea of the PEP grant, and I do a lot of consulting with schools who get the PEP grant. And the biggest thing I tell them is that the equipment is fun, the toys are fun, and it's awesome to have them, and it clearly is more motivating and makes the program much more powerful. But what really should be looked at first is really helping educators in general just really know how to establish an environment that is based on learning. Knowing what you want students to learn first, and then after that deciding what tools do I need to make sure that learning is happening. For a long time, and this is across all academic areas, there's been a huge paradigm shift in the last probably 5 years of looking at teaching as a profession that was about teaching. And it's not looked at that way anymore. It's a profession about student learning. And so when I was trained a long time ago, I was trained to do a unit on the hula hoop, to do a unit with the parachute. And so, you know, I was told, here's your equipment, create a unit around the equipment. Or even, here's your sport, create a unit around the sport. And that's really not the way that current education is looking at things. We're really flipping it and looking at, what do I want my student to learn? And once I know that, without a doubt, what are the non-negotiables that kids are going to learn in the gym, then I can start deciding, well, what equipment is going to help me? What equipment's going to be that tool, that vehicle? And I don't think it's a red rubber ball. We are the one area in the school that reaches the whole child. You know, that's our responsibility. We reach the child's body, the mind, and their affect, their value system. And that's a huge responsibility. But it is an incredible opportunity to be able to be the teacher in the school that can really get at those kids. And not just the kids who are athletes, but we, if we can morph our curriculum and really focus on all children, I think we could be the pivotal part of a school system.
Is that hard to factor in all the kids, the differences?
Well, not any more than it is if you're a reading teacher. Okay. You know, that to me, if I was to say what is one of the biggest challenges, is how do I differentiate to make sure that every child in my class has an opportunity to learn? And it's not about being equal. It's not about making sure every child gets it in the same way. But it's really about figuring out, you know, what are your needs? How can I create a way for you to show me what you learn? And it might not be the same way that Melissa is showing me or Ryan's showing me. And the hard obstacle to that is when you have 40 kids in your classroom or even more. Yes, differentiation is hard, but it is not an excuse. We're teachers in a society where, or in a school, La Crosse School District is committed to absolutely every child. And so it's not a some kids can learn, and the other ones, we're there, we have fun, you hang out in right field, metaphorically, but it's about every child learning. That is our ethical responsibility as teachers.
Is it tough to get some of these kids moving? You know, we're talking the obesity epidemic, kids less likely to exercise, we lose them to video games. Is that something that you're seeing, the obesity epidemic at your level as physical education teachers? Melissa?
Yeah, definitely. We're seeing kids that are more obese than they've ever been before and more students that are overweight and heading in that direction. But we structure our classroom to make sure all students can learn, so we're differentiating. I have so many students that walk in the first day and they're dreading class. And within 15 minutes, they're moving and they're active and they're smiling and they're interacting with their classmates. And they're learning to love PE. They're learning to love movement. So with the hopes that when they leave school, maybe they're walking home. Maybe they're thinking of ways to get active with their friends. But we're doing it. We're doing it now here in the La Crosse School District.
Just the other day, I was teaching a group of 3- and 4-year-olds, and at the end of class, I asked them, so how could you use this stuff at home? And one little boy, you know, I was thinking about that. And so just putting that little nugget into, how can you use this outside of class?
Mm-hmm. How about you, Ryan? Any thoughts?
Yeah, we start to see the kids from early on. You know, they might have issues as far as obesity or trending in towards that way. And it's just our job, especially young and keeping it going all the way through till the last day that we could possibly see them, to be excited about movement or at least have that thought in the back of their head that they're capable of doing something. They've seen success their whole lives in doing skills and or games, units, activities at their own level. You know, Johnny's level of proficiency is going to be different than Mary's or Steve's, but they've had success in their own individuality, and we've carried that through elementary, middle, and high school. And a lazy Saturday in college, instead of laying around playing video games, they're outside playing volleyball, or they went to go frisbee golf down at the park, or they're just getting something going with their friends. And that's what we want to see, even beyond that, all their life.
And Ryan gets at a really, really good point, is that, you know, what do we need to do to help students enjoy movement? And it's different at each developmental level, but there is very, very strong research that says that adults who never developed a foundation of movement. And I'm not talking sports skills. Right. I'm talking a foundation of movement where they're stable, where they're balanced, where they can move with agility. But that, you know, that strong foundation, they are much more likely to choose to be physically active. And so research is saying that early on, movement competency is what makes kids believe that they can do it, and therefore they're in turn more likely to do it. It's not just about getting kids active. It's about getting kids active with a purpose. It's meaningful movement. It's purposeful play.
Is that sort of the holy grail when it comes to physical education, is to get the kids out of class, graduated, and move on to an active life?
Oh, of course. Of course. That is, you know, I would say every physical education mission statement is about preparing students for a lifetime of physical activity. And enjoyment.
Is it tougher now to get a kid active than perhaps 10, 15 years ago?
Not in my class.
I think there's multiple avenues.
I think it's the motivation. I think kids sometimes struggle with play, like how to do it without an adult telling them how to do it. I think our kids do struggle with that. But if they have an opportunity, they're playing and they're moving and they're running. And even my students that I know have been up till 2 a.m. playing video games, they're coming to class and are excited to actually be doing what they were just playing the video games with.
I think the obstacle for a lot of kids is that we need to have a very varied curriculum so we're meeting all the kids' needs. Mm-hmm. I mean, if they've been playing the same games in second grade, and now they're playing them in middle school and playing them in high school, they're not going to want to keep playing. Just like if I wouldn't want to read the same book that I read in second grade and middle and high school. And so it's really about meeting kids where they're at, really finding out what are their developmental characteristics, what are their interests, and then morphing a curriculum around a really small set of non-negotiable learning. Instead of trying to do it all, identify what is your physical education program about, and then that is the non-negotiable core of what students are going to learn, instead of trying to do a little bit of this and a little bit of that.
Would it be nice to have more equipment to work with so kids can say, I like to mountain bike, or kids can say, I like to play baseball, or kids can say, I like to play trackball? That might be a little dated for the younger teachers in the room. Would that help? And how do you get them excited with less?
It's just so much about the relationships. When you get a student to believe in you and they believe that you believe in them, they'll do anything for you. And the problem is that at the high school level, it just takes longer to create that relationship. But if teachers don't quit on a kid, they'll turn over backwards for you if they believe you believe that they can learn and be successful.
This is Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Steve Rysom. It's a roundtable of sorts, a discussion on the challenges and benefits and rewards of teaching kids to be more active, to go out and play, and just have fun. Joining us, Melissa Sprain, a health and physical education teacher. She is at the Lincoln Middle School in La Crosse. Also Ryan Burnt, physical education teacher at Cooley Montessori and at Northside Elementary in La Crosse. And then Dr. Christy Malley. She is with the UWL Physical Education Teacher Education Program. With some of these kids, when they leave elementary, goes to junior high or high school, do you sometimes walk by and go, how are they doing?
Most definitely. And I mean, I even think that about my college kids. But I think that's the cool thing about physical education, is because we don't just see them in one class in their time that they're at your school. We are the teacher that gets to see that incredible growth. So from PK all the way through fifth grade. And so you do develop bonds that actually will last for a lifetime.
Any thoughts from?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I love going to the high school and seeing our kids and going to the Y. Just going to any community event and asking how they're doing. What have you been doing? How have you been moving? I've been using Edmodo in my classroom just to see where my kids that I don't have this semester are at. They post how they were active over the weekend. And so that's how we're kind of putting technology into the classroom, but also trying to actually see what they're doing outside of class, because we ask that question, raise your hand if you did something over the weekend. And kids will raise their hand about a specific activity that we've been working on, and they'll raise their hand and we'll just get a general idea of who's been active. But this allows some of the kids to share some of their specific stories about how active they were, and that's really exciting.
Ryan?
I really feel it's amazing to hear students come in and talk about things that we've learned and the things that they've done outside of class. Last week, actually, this Tuesday, our gym was displaced for the voting, and we understand that's a very important aspect, and I'm happy to do that. But I got to go into the music room with my kindergarten class, and we found a nice, simple, quick, easy little dance for them to learn. And it was from a cartoon that they would have watched, probably Ice Age 4. If you want to look it up, it's the Continental Drift. And it's very simple, maybe 8 moves, and the kids could do it. And I walked into class, and I had the same kids today, and probably half of them told me that they looked it up on YouTube and they could do it. And before I knew it, and before I could even really smile, I had 6 kids doing it from the top in my class. And it was probably the biggest smile I've had, well, not in a long time, but it was so cool to see those students doing that. And it's such pride comes to mind, and to see those kids just grab onto what you're doing and live it is super cool.
Is that, did you have to learn the Continental Drift beforehand in order
to
teach?
I can do the Sid Shuffle like nobody's business.
Yeah, and you thought, I'm going to go teach the kids how to do this?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But see, that's what we need to be doing, Ryan. I because Ryan was one of my students, I have a big smile now on my face because he's reaching out to dance, something that isn't taught a lot in schools, unfortunately, but kids love it.
I think it's also important that we as professionals, no matter who it is in their class, live what you teach. And I feel that more and more people expect to come into a gymnasium and see a guy in polyester shorts with a whistle around his neck, you know, and you don't see that. You see people moving with the kids, and you're down at their level, and you're active with them, and you're enjoying life just as much as you want them to do that, and you have a water bottle on your desk, and you're eating lunch with the kids and having a yogurt and apple and carrots, and you know, you need to really live the example that you're preaching. And I see more and more people doing that.
Ryan Burnt and Melissa Sprain are La Crosse School District physical education teachers. Dr. Christy Malley teaches PE as part of UW-La Crosse's teacher education program. They talked with WPR's Steve Roysom about the state of physical education in schools. Coming up, we'll discuss the issue of Native American artifact reproductions and the economic harm they can bring to Native American tribes. You're listening to Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, I'm Maureen McCollum. To hear this or other recent editions of Newsmakers, visit our website at wpr.org/lacrosse. We also welcome your comments and ideas. Simply follow the links on our archives page at wpr.org/lacrosse.